From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Throughout human history, we've grieved the death of loved ones in community with others. Across cultures, honoring the passing of another human being includes gathering to share sadness, connection, and comfort. But like so many other aspects of our lives, the coronavirus pandemic has altered these rituals. And so today in The Exchange, we examine how these traditions are being upended and what's replacing them, at least for now. We'll also ask what the long-term impacts are of delayed or canceled rituals around death. Listeners, have you experienced the loss of a loved one this year? How did you celebrate their lives? What new ideas did you come up with? And how did you feel about them? Let us know. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. And our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests for the hour. They are Robin Nafshi. She's the rabbi at Temple Beth Jacob in Concord. Also, Dr. Catherine Kirkland, section chief and director of palliative care at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center. And Reverend Jason Wells. He's the director of the New Hampshire Council of Churches. And welcome to everybody. Thank you for your time. And Rabbi Nafshi, I want to start with you. Why is gathering with others so important when it comes to grieving a loss?
I believe human connection is paramount. And when we grieve, what we need to know is that people are there for us, that people care for us, that we are not grieving alone, that our loved one is remembered. And that we're not remembering alone. The grieving process and having friends, relatives, coworkers tell stories, reflect upon the deceased often brings us so much comfort. And it's just not happening now. And it's just so, so hard for people.
You know, I was thinking, Rabbi Nafshi, about weddings and, you know, similar issues around weddings this year, but some people, Rabbi Nafshi, have been perfectly happy to have a very small, you know, two people at the justice of the peace. But mourning someone who's died, Rabbi Nafshi, feels different. I just wonder why that is.
We've all suffered the grief of loss, or if we've been blessed to not, we will. It's a universal experience. And it is something that we as humans share. You know, we look at animals and they may grieve momentarily, particularly pets, if another pet in the house dies. And then they're kind of able to go on. They kind of get it as the part of the cycle. For us, we've developed rituals to help us deal with those losses. And many times these rituals are now abandoned because there's nobody there to do the rituals with, or there's very few people for whom the ritual would make sense anymore. And it's very isolating. And I think for some people, particularly the loved one, often an elderly parent who dies out of state, and the adult child is not able to go to the funeral, it often feels like I've abandoned my loved one. And that just compounds the grief that you're not there. You feel like you've done something wrong by not being there through the illness, by not being there at the time of the death and the funeral. And that just makes your grieving even that much deeper. And there's no one really, there's no community to come and comfort you.
Reverend Wells, what do you think? Why is it so important to do this with other people?
Thank you, Laura. I think that Rabbi Nafshi did hit a number of the important points. Whether or not we are religious people, I think there is something within us that is just in our mind that is wired for human connection and is wired in some sense for ritual. Religious ritual stands in for many people, but even if we're not religious, there are rituals around grieving that I've seen people create for themselves that become very meaningful. And almost all of the time, those rituals, whether they're religious or secular, are things that require the presence of other people, that we do want to have those mercy meals, those religious rituals, such as among our churches, the sharing of Holy Communion, visiting and bringing food to each other in our homes, all of which are off limits for us in this pandemic time.
You know, I'm interested in what you said, Reverend Wells, about ritual. There's some comfort in ritual because it's already set up. Everybody knows what to do. You don't have to think about it.
There is a great gift to ritual, I find a great comfort given to many people knowing that either if they are religious people, that they're somehow knowing that they're doing the right thing, or right. Any person, whether we're religious or not, can just know that we are doing what our deceased family member, the person we're grieving, we're doing what they would have wanted. And I often encourage people when I was serving in churches in New Hampshire to write down any of your funeral plans and the things you want to have done. It was often a great, phenomenal gift for a grieving family to receive instructions from their loved one about what they wanted to have happen, because they can follow the ritual, whether that ritual was religious or not. You're doing what they wanted, and that's a great source of comfort.
Well, and that's exactly where Dr. Catherine Kirkland comes in. Dr. Kirkland, as Director of Palliative Care, what sorts of conversations are you having with families at this moment, this stage in their lives, including perhaps the person who is dying, about following their wishes and following whatever ritual is right for them?
Sure, thank you. There's so much that both Robin and Jason have said that resonates with me. You know, the importance of connection during this whole time of serious illness, and then through the time of loss, death, and then beyond. And the importance of using structures and trying to plan ahead so that you give your family guidance for how to proceed in the event of your death. And not only that, but how to proceed if you have to be hospitalized and they can't be with you. So lots of important things to do. I think that one thing that I've been amazed by is the adaptability and resilience of the people that I've been in contact with, who, as we're doing now by Zoom has sort of come in and given us options that we haven't had before, to connect with people in ways that can be not quite as intimate as being present and able to touch someone during these times, which I think is a deep loss, but to be present and close, and even if by video screen, to be able to exchange some of the words and emotions that take place around these times. So,
can you give us an example, Dr. Kirkland, of how — you don't need to give us, you know, specific names — but of how families have used technology to do the best they can?
Absolutely. I'll give you a couple of examples. One is that one of my colleagues here has worked with friends who create robots to create a remote control robot that can take an iPad into a room of a patient who has COVID, right up to the bedside, and maneuver it so that a family member can speak privately with a loved one during a time of serious illness, with the palliative care provider maybe outside of the room helping to make sure that technology doesn't get in the way. I had a patient over the summer in the ICU whose family was in a Midwestern state and could not visit. And I simply used my iPhone to call them and stood at the bedside with the phone to the ear of the patient so that they could speak with him and I could tell them what I was seeing on the patient's face. And it was deeply meaningful for them. And then finally, I recently was able to participate in a funeral that was held by Zoom. A dear friend of mine died on Thanksgiving, and the local rabbi helped to organize a Zoom service that my friend had planned out to the last speaker. And what amazed me was that more than 300 people from around the world were able to participate in this time of mourning and celebration.
Wow.
Which in a way was a hidden gift of COVID to bring so many people together who wouldn't have been able to come on such short notice, you know, over Thanksgiving to be here in person.
And Dr. Kirkland, first of all, let me say I'm very sorry for your loss. That's quite recent. So it's good of you to share that with us, because I know that's fresh for you. But it's also, you know, interesting to think about the position now that you are in, Dr. Kirkland, as a doctor. I mean, again, working in palliative care, you're always sort of there when families are in this moment. But now it sounds like just your story about you holding the phone and you telling the family how the loved one is reacting, you're kind of right in it, aren't you?
Yes, and that is not so different from the routine for me. I have the privilege of being able to be present, whereas it's the families that are having to adapt to not being able to be here. And I think they're the ones that feel that pain. Normally, I would be in the room potentially with the family as they were bearing witness to a loved one's illness. And this time I'm serving as a sort of go-between, trying to facilitate the connection in whatever way that it can happen.
Well, I want to remind listeners that we are talking about end-of-life rituals and how they have played out in 2020. We've been exploring how Granite Staters are celebrating the lives of those who have died, even when it is unsafe to gather together. And listeners, tell us, have you attended a Zoom funeral recently? Have you created new ways to honor your loved ones? How are you grieving the loss of family members during this very difficult time? And we'd love to hear your stories, your questions and comments too. You can email us at exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Or give us a call, 800-892-6477, 800-892-6477. You can use Facebook or Twitter as well. And Eileen wrote us, she says, my mom passed away last Wednesday. She lives in Florida, so I'm not only managing the logistics of bringing her home, but trying to figure out what to do next, Eileen says. I had assumed we would wait until spring and try to put something together then, but perhaps I will be inspired by others in this discussion and think of something else. And Eileen will definitely talk about just what people have tried to do in this time. So thank you. We'll try to be helpful this hour for you, Eileen. What about that, Reverend Wells? You know, trying to think of something. How are you and the pastors that you work with trying to help people figure out a reasonable alternative, an alternative that feels okay?
Yes, yes. Thank you, Eileen, for sharing that with us. You know, I'm mindful that this is a time of year where we're surrounded by holidays, and this is a time when you know, people who are grieving very recent losses or grieving difficult losses for a long time. Our holiday season urges us to put on a veneer of happiness that many of us are not able to feel because of the grief that we're going through. It's this time of year that has many churches I know within the Council of Churches and hospital chaplains and others will hold services that they often call Blue Christmas, that just opens up a religious and a worshipful place to be with God and to bring your grief at a time when all the other cultural signals tell us we're supposed to be happy and joyous. And I wonder, I see those are moving to the Zoom realm in the pandemic time, of course. But I would wonder if there's room to take something that is such a wise idea of creating room for grief in the middle of a contrary season to adapt those kinds of practices, just to mark out the place to attend to ourselves and to attend to our own human need to grieve.
Eileen, thanks for writing. And let's take a call. This is Steve in Nottingham. Hi, Steve. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning. And I find it so bizarre to talk about one of the things that COVID-19 has, the advantages has it led, is recently I attended a Shiva for someone who died in Westboro, Massachusetts. That proved to be a wonderful, for bad term, an incredible event where people from around the country, not only from New Hampshire, but relatives and friends in California, could join and hear the stories of the family and work together. And that would not have happened under normal circumstances. It's amazing what Zoom can do in certain situations. So I must have become a great fan of Zoom.
Yeah, Steve, thank you for calling. And Rabbi Nafshi, first, just remind listeners who aren't familiar what sitting Shiva is and how some people have done that over Zoom or other platforms.
Yeah, so it's kind of tied in a little bit to a response to the email from Eileen, which is, you know, many outside the Jewish faith will often feel like they have, quote unquote, the luxury to just wait until spring. And in the Jewish community, we generally bury and bury very quickly. A funeral will often take place 24 to 48 hours after the death of the individual. And then after the funeral, traditionally, the mourners observe what is called a period of Shiva, or to sit Shiva, Shiva meaning seven. And that is for 7 days. Generally, they would be home, visitors would come to them, bring them food. They really have no obligations whatsoever other than being home and mourning and grieving. And so Shiva has become, in the traditional way, impossible during COVID. Gathering large groups of people in one's home is obviously not acceptable behavior. And so, as the caller points out, there have been a number of Shiva gatherings, Shiva services that have been done over Zoom, and it does bring people together from across the world who would not have otherwise been there. At the same time, one of the pieces that is lost in Zoom is that Shiva can often be a very loving and intimate moment where a person sits down with a mourner and holds their hand to be able to say, you know, your husband was my physician for 40 years, was my lawyer for all these years, was my former math teacher, was, you know, just a coworker, whatever. And to tell those stories in a very intimate way while others in the room or in the home are sharing their own stories with each other. Oh, how did you know so-and-so? And that's lost because we have to create a new way of being on Zoom, talk one at a time, share those stories one at a time. And yes, it brings more people together and it allows more people to be there for the mourners. And there are things that we also lose. So I would agree with the caller that there are things we've gained. But we also have to recognize what we have lost. And I suspect going forward, we may develop hybrids so that there will be a Shiva back in the home, but maybe we will still have a Zoom opportunity for people around the world or outside of the local area who would not otherwise be able to attend.
Right. I myself went to a Zoom funeral, obviously for the first time, back in the spring, and it was odd to see everybody in their little boxes. It was a friend's mother, and in a way, I understand what Steve in Nottingham is saying. It was very nice that all of us could jump on from around the country and honor this person who we loved. But I do remember one moment where my friend's daughter was, you know, started to cry because her grandmother had died, and it was just so strange, you know, watching her crying on this little box on a screen and no one could hug her. So, you know, we're doing the best we can, but I hear you, Rabbi Nafshi. It's odd. And we got an email from Michael, who is not a fan of these services online. Michael says, I know these are strange times, but this injection of steel and silicone into what is a deeply emotional human experience is grotesque. And Michael, thank you for writing in. Dr. Kirkland, to you, when online is the only option, and, you know, we have seen funerals become COVID spreader events, how have you seen it done well, Dr. Kirkland?
You know, I think there is many ways to do it well, as there are individuals who want to plan. I think that key of sort of trying to think ahead and share what would be meaningful to the person who's dying, for a family to be able to enact that for a loved one, whether, you know, on steel and the video, I agree. It's, I think, as everyone has said, the huge loss of being able to touch someone who is hurting. That's not really replaceable. I think it's important for all of us to take this awareness home with us today. And those people who, if you're lucky enough to live in a household with someone you can touch, with someone you can hug, with someone you can be with without a mask, do so now, because it may not be possible if that person gets sick. So I just wanted to also say one additional thing.
Sure.
And that is that all of us are experiencing loss through COVID. Death is obviously the ultimate loss, but when we think about, we're listening to people today speak of the loss of rituals, the loss of touch, the loss of normalcy, the loss of life. And I think rituals help all of us to make meaning of and comfort each other through times of loss. For instance, our interdisciplinary team every morning has a centering activity, listening to a poem or a piece of music together. We weekly remember people on our service who we've cared for, who have lost. Having these services, going through rituals, even if they are not 100% what we would like, still serves a really important function.
Yeah, and that's the message from 2020, I guess, right? Like, you know, it's not what you want, it's not how you would have it, but you do what you can. Let's take another caller. This is Nancy in Goffstown. Hi, Nancy. Thanks for being with us today. Go ahead. You're on the Exchange.
Yes, I'm a priest here at St. Matthew's Episcopal Church in Goffstown, and I'm so appreciative of what you guys are having on your show today. What comes to mind is a particular parishioner who couldn't see her husband for months. He had to go into the nursing home, so there was a lot of guilt and grief right there. And then when COVID hit, she couldn't see him, and he ended up dying of COVID. And just the deep grief of non-closure, of like what Dr. Kirkland was saying, of a funeral lets you be there physically for someone who's grieving. Well, just the grief of not being able to be there for her husband for all those months. And, you know, as a priest, not being able to fix that for her and not being able to have, you know, an easy way to help her feel better, but just how important it is to be with the people in that non-closure, because, you know, Zoom is really wonderful, but it doesn't take away that aspect. And another thing I want to say real quick is how important it is, the LNAs, the nurses who are there for our family members and who do give these people dignity and who do hold their hand and who do, you know, help them remain human. I just think we can't thank them enough.
Yeah, I hear you, Nancy, and I've been thinking about how it really is an added role for those healthcare workers, because family members can't come in and, you know, do what they would like to do. I really appreciate the call, and After a break, actually, I want to ask all of you about what Nancy said about, you know, if you can't process the grief or process the end of life in the way that you would like to, how that kind of hangs on. Complicated grief, I think, is the official term for it. And I know you have a lot to say about that, all of you. So we'll talk about that after a break. We're also going to talk with a funeral director about the services that she's helped coordinate this year. All that's coming up, plus more of your calls at 800-892-6477 or email exchange@nhpr.org. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we're talking about how to hold funerals and end-of-life rituals during COVID-19. And listeners, it's been great to hear from you. Tell us how you're honoring the loved ones that you've lost this year. Have you attended a Zoom funeral, as some of our callers have? How did it go? Email us, exchange@nhpr.org. Tell us what other ideas you've come up with to celebrate the lives of loved ones. You can use Facebook, you can tweet us, or you can call in 1-800-892-6477. With us now is Katie Roan. She's a funeral director and owner of Pettit Roan Funeral Home in Pembroke. And Katie, welcome. It's really good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
What's been the toughest part of your job, Katie, since the pandemic began? And it's been a long time.
It has. I'd say just being ourselves with families, being able to hug families or shake someone's hand, just the connection. We're a small town funeral home, two small town funeral homes, and we know these people. We've gotten to know them, you know, since we've been here, and seeing someone pass and not being able to give them a hug or not being able to have the community here like we have in the past is difficult to watch.
So things sort of changed over the pandemic, right, Katie? At first you couldn't do anything, and then you could do limited numbers, and then you could go outside. And just give us a sense of how this has kind of ebbed and flowed for you in terms of the rules and regulations, Katie.
Right. So we started off with not being able to do anything. We would just have a cremation take place, and then we would hold on, like Rabbi said, till the spring. There was, you know, we'll wait till spring, maybe this will pass, or maybe we'll wait till summer and it'll be gone. And then they opened us up to 40% capacity. So our building changed, the amount of seats we were allowed to have. We have markings on the floor, there's hand sand everywhere. You know, we had to take away things, separate the family from the public. Everybody walks through. Churches are 50%. So every other or every two pews, we can have people. We're trying to limit how much is touched. We have, you know, sanitizing pens, only one person handing out prayer cards instead of letting people take them. Everybody has masks all the time. Graveside services were amazing during the summer and late fall. We were lucky enough to get late fall because we weren't closing it down. We were asking people to keep distance. We were asking people to wear masks, but we can't really control what they do outside. And it's just been kind of, I don't know. It's changed over and over. And
you've really had to be flexible.
Yes,
Katie, because it has changed over and over. And I feel for you because it is such a difficult time for people and you want to do your best. But then you have to say, stay 6 feet apart. How have you seen people getting creative in terms of how they approach these memorial services?
They're doing things at their home. If they want to do something and not be restricted on what they can do. We haven't done any Zoom funerals. We've done Facebook Live gravesides. We offer a webcasting service for any family that wants it, whether it's in the funeral home, whether it's in a church. We did one drive-through visitation. We had a family that was adamant, and this was right over the summer. It was probably in August because it was a good 90 degrees. Our Epsom facility has a overhang We had the person's casket right at the front door. The family was sitting 6 feet apart outside our front door underneath, and people would drive through. So just coordinating the parking lot and keeping traffic flowing. And they had a son in Iraq serving, and he was able to get on the tribute cast and kind of talk to friends that were driving through at the same time because he wasn't able to be here.
Have you had to buy lots of new equipment, Katie, to sort of accommodate these new and changing needs? What have your costs been like from all this?
It hasn't been too bad. A new iPad, a tripod with a microphone that picks up more. The hand sanitizer machines, it hasn't been horrible.
When someone dies from COVID-19, Katie, how do you approach that? Are there special safety protocols when someone has died of COVID?
We're supposed to use the same protocols that the nursing homes are using, gowns, gloves, N95s, and face shields. We do have respirators that I purchased right before everything shut down and started flying off the shelves. So myself and my two coworkers have respirators if embalming is required.
Yeah. So how have your families been responding to some of the new ways that you have to do things, Katie? Do you get any pushback from people? Do they say, no, I don't want to do it that way?
In the beginning, we got pushback about masks. We told them this is, you know, what the state is asking us to do in order to stay open. This is not our rule. We fully support it, however, because we don't want to be responsible for an outbreak. And most people are really understanding. If they have a service, they're just very thankful to be able to do it, and they weren't having to hold on and wait.
Yeah, because some people want to do this right away, as Rabbi Nafshi said. Last question for you, Katie, please. Is there anything else that you want the public to appreciate or to understand about the work that you're trying to do in this very difficult time?
We're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Most of us did not get, and I won't say most of us, anybody in funeral service really didn't get a break when everything else was shut down. Please wear your mask. Seeing these outbreaks at nursing homes is heartbreaking to watch and see. I did a transfer out of the veterans home in Bosquin, and I've been doing this for over 22 years. We see a ceremony where all the veterans gather around. They render taps. They all salute. It's a touching ceremony if you've ever seen it. And a couple weeks ago, I went up there and there was nothing. There was one other veteran sitting in the hallway. He nodded his head at the gentleman that I was taking out, and that was all he got.
Oh, wow.
This is scary. See the nurses breaking down. They're losing. These aren't just people to them. They're family. They're taking care of them. These people that are passing. It's all heartbreaking. Just wear your mask, whether you agree with it or not. We're going to keep somebody else safe. It's scary for us, too. We live above the funeral home with our family, and to bring people in that have COVID and know we're trying to keep a distance from our family that's just upstairs.
Well, Katie, you're working hard. I really appreciate you being with us this morning. Thank you very much, and good luck. We'll hope that things get easier next year.
Thank you for having me.
That's Katie Roan. She's a funeral director and owner of Pettit Roan Funeral Home in Pembroke. Again, our number here on The Exchange is 800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook, use Twitter, or again, give us a call, 800-892-6477. And Reverend Wells, Rabbi Nafshi, Dr. Kirkland, I want to return to something that Nancy, our caller, mentioned a few minutes ago. She said she was an Episcopal priest. And she said she was concerned. I think I'll turn to you first, Rabbi Nafshi. She was concerned about the impact on people's psychology when they are denied the comfort of being with the individual in their last days and the comfort of others when that individual passes away. Complicated grief is how I've called it, Rabbi Nafshi. What is that?
It is when you're not able to grieve in the quote unquote traditional way, the typical way, the being with your loved one. And as Nancy called, the Reverend mentioned, there's guilt for not being able to be with the person. There's anger. There's all kinds of emotions that come up that wind up complicating the grief. And making it grief upon grief. There's the normal grief of your loved one dying, and then there's all of the grief that is compounding it because of your inability to have been with the person. There's a field that developed, in fact, with military grief called moral injury, and we're seeing it more and more during the time of COVID, in which people who felt like their government would have helped in a way and responded in a way to have minimized deaths, or any number of other people you might direct your anger toward, is leading people to also feel morally outraged. And that moral injury is a type of trauma that becomes almost so difficult to address in the sort of normal therapeutic way. But what we're finding, 30-40% of adults in the United States are reporting a decline in their mental health during COVID. And those are folks who have not had losses. So right. Those who also had the losses, it's just compounding and compounding. And from a chaplain's point of view, a clergy point of view, we're not trained as therapists. We're trained, in our spiritual, our traditions. To be with people, and very often it's not enough. And we have to recognize that sometimes we have to direct people to support groups that are meeting over Zoom, ironically, that we have to direct them towards therapists who are meeting mostly over, not in person, and all of the ways that people need support beyond really what their faith community can give them.
We got an email from Anne who says, I have recently attended two of the most moving memorial services I've ever attended. The daughters organized a Zoom service for each parent with a shared screen for pictures from different parts of their lives, accompanied by beautiful music, stories from relatives, friends and colleagues, and finally a toast by everyone and a chance to speak. Almost 200 people attended from all over the world, and the services lasted about 2.5 hours. Anne, thank you very much for sharing that. And Reverend Wells, I just love your reaction to Anne's email.
Thank you, Laura. And thank you, Anne, for sharing that. I think that's a fantastic example for some of the creative opportunities we might have to extend or transform our rituals around grieving into the pandemic and Zoom era. I love the idea of being able to use Zoom to do what we might often do at a wake or calling hours or at mercy meals. It sounds like a fantastic transformation into that space. I often think of the times in which I have led funeral services in a church, and we often will allow family members or other people to come up to a pulpit microphone and do some of the kinds of storytelling that Anne is describing. And there's always sort of a little bit of pain that we're limited in when we're gathered in the physical space of a church. There may be a caterer waiting with a meal or a need to get to the graveside at a particular time that cuts that time short. And so I think it could be a wonderful gift to have a 2+ hour opportunity for photo and story sharing. That might not be afforded to us if we, even in a pre-pandemic era, if we were gathered physically in our worship space where there are other constraints on us. So that's wonderful to hear.
Dr. Kirkland, Rabbi Nafshi talked about, complicated grief. And I wonder if it's helpful for people to, again, set up what they would like to see happen at their funeral beforehand. Talk to their loved ones beforehand, even if they can't in person. I wonder if having these conversations earlier in the process, before the loved one passes away, makes that complicated grief less complicated.
Absolutely, Laura. I think, this is just an amazing advertisement for everyone, whether you're ill or not, to stop and think about what's important to you at the time that you do get sick, at the time as you move towards the end of life, so that you can leave a roadmap for your family. I think that people whose family members provide them guidance about not just what kind of rituals after death, but really what kinds of quality of life makes life worth living. What kinds of trade-offs are they willing to make if they get extremely ill and need to be on a ventilator or in the ICU? Giving a family member a roadmap about your values and wishes can alleviate huge amounts of regret, guilt, and feelings that somehow people did something wrong, which, as the rabbi mentioned, can compound the experience of grief and sometimes even lead to what, you know, is also a medical diagnosis of complicated grief, where people just simply can't get past the experience of the kind of grief that interferes with functioning. Wow. And we know that family members who carry uncertainty, guilt, and regret over decisions they had to make at the time of the end of life of a loved one can cause psychological distress to them for periods of months and even longer. So during this time when we're forced to be home with small groups of intimate family members, maybe another hidden gift of COVID is that it creates that time, that downtime, for us to have these conversations that can be difficult, but also can be such a gift to your family members. So I just can't encourage people enough to do that. And I just wanted to comment on Anne's beautiful story and just how remarkable people are in the ways that they adapt and show resilience in the face of a pandemic that none of us control. Bad things are happening. We didn't cause it. We can't fix it. All we can do is to bear witness and to try to adapt and find joy and comfort in what we can do. And that was just a beautiful example of someone who did do that.
Absolutely. Well, and keep the emails coming. Our address is exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number is 800-892-6477. So coming up, more on grief and, as Dr. Kirkland said, resilience in 2020. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour, we're discussing end-of-life rituals during a pandemic. And listeners, how are you celebrating family members who have died? How are you grieving at a time when it's unsafe to gather with others? Let us know. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org, or call 1-800-892-6477. We're talking with Rabbi Robin Nafshi of Temple Beth Jacob in Concord, Dr. Catherine Kirkland, Director of Palliative Care at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center, and Jason Wells, Director of the New Hampshire Council of Churches. And all of you, right back to our listeners. Beverly's calling in from Amherst. Beverly, you're on The Exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Yes, I have something I'd like to share. I experienced a loss, and I had asked everyone who was close to the person I lost to write a little story. Just some event or occasion or just interaction that they could share with me that had to do with this person. And I compiled a notebook of these stories, and there's nothing that can replace the letters that people wrote of sometimes humorous stories, sometimes sad, sometimes complex, but I can still refer to those, to that notebook. So the old-fashioned letter still has so much to offer. It's not complicated. It's touching. And it remains with you as those memories remain with the loved one. So I wanted
Beverly,
to offer that.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sorry again to hear about your loss, and I'm glad you called. So you asked people to write you stories, and then they wrote you physical letters that arrived at your house?
They wrote physical letters of experiences, exchanges, family events, and I still have that notebook. And yeah. It makes me laugh. Sometimes it, you know, brings chuckles, but it more than anything brings the experience of that living individual to the present. And when we grieve, oftentimes that sadness overshadows who that person really was, the light they had that you were able to share. And these stories bring the real person back to life. And it's like a gathering around a table, family members telling funny stories. And anytime I feel like I need that, I have that notebook to refer to.
Oh, Beverly, that's great. And you can pull that out anytime that you're feeling down about that. So thank you for calling in. And, you know, Rabbi Nafshi, we've all had to get creative and exhibit resilience during the past 10 months. In what ways do you see us getting better at grieving during this pandemic, whether we've lost a loved one or just grieving those general losses in our daily lives?
I think we've had to lower our expectations and and accept where we are and what the reality is. You know, 10 months in, we really don't have a choice. And I think as Dr. Kirkland points out, you know, the human is for the most part quite resilient and quite able to cope and make changes and adapt. And that's what I'm seeing. Whereas early in the pandemic, I remember when children of elderly parents would come to me about their parent nearing death and what it was going to look like. And it was very strange. I remember a funeral where we did at the Veterans Hospital, Veterans Cemetery. There were literally three mourners there. And the funeral held up, director held up a telephone in order for it to go out over Zoom. And now people just understand that that is the way it's going to be. Either over Zoom or Facebook, whatever works for the funeral home. It has its challenges. Sometimes if they're far away from the officiant, people who are on Zoom or Facebook can't really hear, you know, but still we have changed our expectations. And I want to also respond to the caller, because what a beautiful legacy. And most of the time we only get to hear those stories. We don't get them written down. And I think what she points out is the long-term need to be able to reflect back. And when we're only telling the stories, we don't always remember them. And this is something that I hope will remain with us post-pandemic, that we'll return to having in-person funerals and mercy meals and Shiva Minyan and all of those things. But maybe too, we can honor the deceased through writing things down to give to the mourners and letting them be able to reflect back.
We're gonna
definitely integrate some of the things we've learned. And I think that's one of them.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I'm just picturing Beverly, you know, sitting on the couch going through this notebook when she's feeling sad and finding comfort with it. And often we write someone a sympathy card, but going another extra step and saying, you know, this is what your loved one meant to me. So thank you so much for calling, Beverly. And let's take another caller. This is Nina in Portsmouth. Hi, Nina. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Thank you for your program. And I just want to tell you, I'm a Swede, and in Sweden, the pastors and all the churches, there is a written up couple of sheets that everyone, you know, especially seniors get. And it says, where do you want your funeral? And what hymns do you want? And so on and so on. And so I... And then they say to have an envelope where it says my funeral appointment, and then my mother had told me where it was, and we went to the church and looked, and she talked to the pastor that was going to do it. We talked where the little gathering was going to be after. We looked at that, and we at home we're talking about the hymns, and it wasn't all done in a day, you know. You do it when you feel it's a good time, and it felt so wonderful. I my mother always welcomed people with sherry, so at the gathering after, we had sherry for everyone.
Nina, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and well, all this. So I just wanted to inflict that. And
I'm so glad you did. Because that relates to something that, you know, that Dr. Kirkland keeps saying, let your loved ones know in advance of what you want. And then when the time comes, they're going to feel so good. They'll feel like they're completely honoring you with sherry or whatever else it may be. And Reverend Wells, how much do pastors encourage this, encourage especially their elderly members, but you know, anyone is vulnerable, to share in advance?
Great question, Laura. And I think, yes, I resonate with what I heard Dr. Kirkland saying earlier in the program. I would encourage pastors to do this more and more frequently. This was actually something that I would offer as a class every few years when I was serving a church in Concord, that during the Christian season of Lent, we would take several weeks to talk about what the scriptures say about death and life after death. We would read poetry like John Donne's sonnet, Death Be Not Proud, and kind of get to the emotional places we needed to and spiritual places we needed to be. We would actually talk with a lawyer about finances and will writing. We would talk to a funeral home and with the pastor about planning a funeral service like we just heard. It was a marvelous thing. People who were older, but people who were young families and parents would come to this class that helps to give a great, it's a wonderful time to have a conversation about death when it's not urgent, when it's not immediate, when you can have the conversations you'd like to have about life and death. I think this is something that is within the reach of almost every faith community to do. And sort of like the caller had said, I would let the family have a copy of those funeral plans. Sometimes people would write their own obituaries the way they wish it would be written about them. And we would keep a photocopy of it in the church's files. Very regularly, we would have someone in our congregation who died, and the children themselves may not be religious and don't know where to begin. And being able to say, well, I know exactly what your family member wanted was a marvelous gift for them, and help them learn, even in death, they were learning new things about their own family members that they may not have realized until that moment.
Nina, I'm glad you called. What a relief for the family to have a lot of those questions already answered. Another question for you, Reverend Wells. How much are you expecting a surge in funerals in the spring and the summer as people who did postpone because they wanted that physical gathering try to gather once it's safer?
Great. Insightful question. That's actually, one question that the Council of Churches, we've already started to anticipate, since most of our churches are in a position where you can postpone a funeral or a burial service. And we were actually aware back in the spring, as the pandemic was first shutting things down, that in many places in the state of New Hampshire, having a burial in the ground is difficult because the ground is frozen a good portion of the year. And so I'd spoken with some funeral directors in Berlin, in the North Country, where in April and May, they were just seeing the ground thaw enough to start resuming funerals from the previous December 2019.
Oh, wow.
And so, I mean, I think that urges the question about grieving and grieving when it's extended so long over the winter into the spring, just in time for there to be shutdowns when grief gets further extended and our rituals are delayed again. So this is actually a question the Council of Churches has started to open up with the New Hampshire Funeral Directors Association to talk about, do we expect a surge? We've encouraged local congregations, pastors, to reach out to their local funeral homes, like the Roan Funeral Home that was on before. It's when you're not needing to plan a funeral right now, this is a great time to talk about some of those expectations, how we would handle a potential surge, if that is what comes, and how we can build a constructive working relationship to help meet the needs of families, to bring grieving people the peace and healing they're hoping for.
Well, Reverend Wells, it's good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Jason Wells, Director of the New Hampshire Council of Churches. Rabbi Nafshi, good to talk to you too. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Robin Nafshi. She's the rabbi at Temple Beth Jacob in Concord. And Dr. Kirkland, it was really good to talk to you too. Thank you for your time.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Laura.
Today's program was produced by Exchange Fellow Jane Vaughn. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.